As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Sift Spoil for Relic. We're going to give you all the hanging threads, romances, jokes, Easter eggs, cameos, deaths, resurrections, or post-credit sequences.
They all die.
For Relic. So let's start here with this movie at the end, which I really loved, how deep and meaningful it is. Through this whole movie, you get a sense of some sort of demon shadow that is chasing this woman, and that her daughter and granddaughter are, you know, kind of in this house and starting to kind of awaken to this demon and having to deal with it. And then at the very end of the movie, the daughter decides to stay behind with, you know, her demon-possessed mother, and very tenderly removes the skin from her until she is just a shadow, you know, a shadow demon, which is kind of what we've seen before. And then the daughter, or the granddaughter, I should say, comes in and lays next to them and sees that there's a mark growing on her mother's back that resembles kind of the decay that the house has and that her grandmother succumbed to. And it was shortly before that I started to realize that this was about dementia, that this was a metaphor for growing old in dementia. And honestly, part of that deep meaning for me is watching my mom deal with her mom. And that has been very recent. My grandmother passed away within the last year or two. And there was a long time of dealing with dementia and loss of memory and just the changes that come with that. And I started re-seeing the rest of the movie through that lens. And there's so many clues to this metaphor throughout the movie. You know, the post-it notes that, you know, remember to turn off the faucet, those kind of things. The idea that she's eating memories, you know, the idea that those are disappearing for her. You know, there's at one point she urinates on herself. You know, like the movie is almost blatantly about the process of dementia, but you're so tuned into the demon part of it that you relate it to that instead of how your brain would naturally see that. So, so that's the big metaphor. Andrew, what was your experience in realizing that and kind of seeing different clues, different things like that?
Well, I was initially, like, pretty early on, that's kind of what I was leaning towards, like, oh, maybe it's dementia and stuff like that. But then the movie kind of, I would say, shies away or pushes away from that just to not have that reveal then, I guess, because the daughter or the granddaughter starts, you know, going through the house, you know, and hearing things. And I'm like, well, it can't be dementia if it's affecting the granddaughter. And then the granddaughter starts seeing the house morph, you know, towards the end of this movie, and she's like trapped in it. And then the mother's trapped in it too. And it becomes much more of a cliched horror film. But I think if they would have pushed that aside and just leaned more towards, you know, just the shadowy figure walking around as opposed to the house being animated,
mm-hmm.
then I think it would have made more sense, and I would have been much more understanding of the movie and what it was trying to say. But I think that the movie wanted to shadow and hide its true intentions until the end, which I'm not saying doesn't work. I agree with you 100%. The ending of this movie is very powerful, of them all laying next to each other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, three generations.
You know, yeah, because the person you knew, you know, that person is gone, and now you're left with this shell, this shadowy
mm-hmm.
presence of who you once knew. You can kind of see glimpses, but it's, unfortunately, it's not the same person. But your love for that person that they once were will always be there, so you'll stick with them. And Emily Mortimer staying behind is what turns this movie from me just not liking it at all to like, oh, this is, it's saying something. Mm-hmm. And the movie is saying something really powerful.
Yeah.
It's just, I think that it's trying to be hidden. It gets caught up in its own love of jump scares, I guess you could say, that it kind of in parts forgets what it's trying to say.
Yeah, it's making a very purposeful comparison of dementia to an actual horror movie demon, right? And so, again, I think a lot of those tropes probably at the end of the day are intentional. The house thing I saw as a way to indicate how you want to run away when this is happening to someone you love. You don't want to be there. You don't. It changes so much about that environment that it becomes suffocating, that it becomes something you don't recognize. So I think, you know, I think the house thing is about that, is about the being present for somebody who's going through that. And if you see dementia as demon possession, you know, this idea, and that's what makes the end so powerful when she decides to come back in this house, is that she is choosing, you know, the love of this person over the demon that has possessed this person. And so I think that's what the house was about. And the trying to escape the house and then eventually deciding to come back in. So it really changed everything I thought about this movie, and I'm having trouble wrestling with the fact that I was rolling my eyes through so much of it, and then it hit me with a beautiful revelation, and it doesn't change the fact that I didn't really connect with this movie for 90% of the movie. That really happened. That genuinely happened. I was not connecting to it. It was just another trope, and then, you know, the question is that last 10% enough to redeem the 90%? And it might be. Like I said, my opinion keeps changing as I keep wrestling with it. But
yeah. There's scenes like early on when the mother, I forget her name, the grandmother, I should say, mm-hmm. comes back, and she starts to
Edna.
Act like a child. She's like Edna. Yeah, thank you. She's like, there's something under the bed, you know, and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And because sometimes, you know, whenever you're dealing with dementia, it feels like you're taking care of a child, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then there's other parts of the movie where I'm like, but what? How does this tie in? And maybe you don't, maybe, like, for example, there's a scene where Emily Mortimer walks downstairs to see her mom standing next to the front door, and as she's walking, the demon is like following her from behind.
Yeah.
And then when you think that Edna is like, we're seeing the back of her, we're actually seeing the front of her. She just has her hair over her face, which I'm not going to lie, that scene actually kind of got me. I'm like, ooh, that was actually kind of creepy. That was a really good,
The way they did that. That wasn't tropey. That was a fairly unique kind of scare. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. But I just don't know like how that, I'm using that as an example of something I don't understand how that is serving either the metaphor or the story and is just there to go, ooh, spooky.
So I will give you my understanding. Again, that's all I can do. What I think we're feeling, what we're supposed to feel in that moment is that Kay, the Emily Mortimer character, is starting to understand both with the bed, looking under the bed, and in that where the you know, there's a shadow behind her. She's starting to feel the presence of a real thing that is happening, and she's having to come to terms with that something bad is happening. You know, that like she's having to find her way out of denial, and in the processing of what's going on, because when you're dealing with somebody who is, especially in those first stages of dementia, it's perfect for a lot of the time. Everything's fine for a lot of the time. And then there are just those moments where it's like, this is scary. What's going on? Why are you standing by the front door in the middle of the night and not remembering why? That's a very real thing, right? Like that could very real happen. And so it's in those moments, the shadowy presence is there to indicate that, you know, this demon is coming and she, you know, she's going to have to deal with the reality of that. So it's, you know, the possession of that demon is the transition to dementia. And so I think that's what it's supposed to indicate.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is a really smart movie, and I think it's really well done. And, I know that I'm going to continue to process it, and I think it really is one of those things where it's quite possible that the last 10% completely redeems the movie, but I'm just still wrestling with it.
Yeah. Something we didn't talk about in a podcast proper, I think the sound, like the score for this movie, is very, you know, basic and just bass, you know, just... Mm-hmm. Wow, but it works. I think that the sound design for this is really good.
Yeah, I agree. It's a really well done film. I think I've already convinced myself that I'm in the liked it category. You can probably hear it in the way I talk about the movie, but I think in real time, recording the podcast in this SIF spoil, you've seen me go from mid side of it's okay to high side of it's okay to low side of liked it. So, you know, I'll probably be firmly in the liked it, maybe high side of liked it within a couple weeks, which is kind of the beauty of movies, right? Like they can take their time and they can have impact. So, I think I've convinced myself that I like this movie now. So how about that?
There you go. It's going to be in your top 100 movies before
that's
we know
right,
it.
That's right. Next week, it'll be my number one movie of all time. I don't see that happening.
Sorry, Singing in the Rain.
That's right. Oh, my goodness. Could there be two different movies? thank you so much for checking out the SIF spoil with us. I would love to hear your thoughts on this movie as well. Maybe those little pieces of the metaphor that you caught that we didn't mention. I'd love to hear those. Let us know. feedback@sifpop.com. Until next time, we'll see you then.
Bye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.